Hey friends, this episode brought to you by the inaugural Asia Pacific Podcast Conference coming soon to New Zealand. If you're interested in starting a podcast, you're an existing podcaster, or involved in radio or media, then this event is perfect for you. I'll be there along with other local and international speakers, so visit www.asiapacificpodcastconference.com to register. Hey folks, we're about to kick off with this week's podcast. Before we kick it off, here's a nice little philosophy moment with my pal, Andre King Comedy. Enjoy.
Whoa, this is my Kiwi life.
Success can be measured in more than money.
Hey friends, thanks so much for joining me on this week's episode of My Kiwi Life. I'm your host, Will Fleming, and on this week's podcast, I sit down with healer and change therapist Sally Caldwell for a conversation about how her worst fears came to life. A fear that caused massive trauma in Sally's life, causing her to ask the question, am I going crazy? What Sally didn't realize, though, is that the trauma was actually opening her up to a whole new chapter in her life. In my chat with Sally, we talk about her field of change therapy and the idea of feeling your way forward, the way that tribes have done for thousands of years, is something that only now science is catching up with, but it might be the answer for us going forward. Now, this episode deals with some what you might call woo-woo topics, but whatever, right? Here on My Kiwi Life, we're about perspective. And sharing that perspective, sharing ideas. And Sally's story is amazing, so sit back and enjoy. This episode deals with trauma in a new way, a more meaningful way. Imagine the idea that we need trauma in our lives, just like we need water or food. Well, I pitch it to Sally anyway. I came across Sally back in episode 2 of the podcast when I yarned with Jimmy Hunt. He talked about this woman that helped him become the new Jimmy. So I started looking for Sally, and after heaps of emails, heaps of calls, I was finally able to track her down and book in a time to chat. Sally pointed out to me that she doesn't do media, and I replied, me neither. So this conversation is just that, a conversation about life and what it means to be human. Specifically, how we need to work on feelings instead of thinking our way through life. Thanks again for joining me, friends. Enjoy this week's podcast.
My Kiwi Life, let's play the game of life today. My Kiwi Life, the ups and downs we live each day. This is my Kiwi Life. Oh, this is my Kiwi Life.
So, Sally, I wrote a few notes, but
hoping you don't give me a question. I go, I've got no idea.
Yeah. Do you know what, though? If you don't have an idea, it's okay.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the times on here, and we're recording, I don't have an idea either.
Yeah.
But there's this constant pressure on us to feel like we have to have an idea.
That's actually very true. And I think that, you know, it's one of the things that we've brought up in this civilization is you've got to know, and if you don't know, you're an idiot, and if you don't know, you're going to be fired. And to say I don't know is actually probably one of the it takes a lot of strength.
Yeah.
But from that point, that takes you to know that that's an okay thing to say takes you out of what we call the fight, flight, freeze cycle. Mm. And to say, I've got to know everything, I've got to have the solution.
Yeah.
You know, it's very much the fear / sort of solving strategy of this sort of civilization. And actually to actually say, I don't have to know, and I don't know, and to go in and be able, therefore, to what we say, sit in a place of unconditional love towards ourselves. It's okay not to know. You wouldn't say to a child, welcome to the world. You better bloody figure everything out, otherwise you're screwed. You say, hey, just love yourself. What you know is cool, and what you don't know. That gives a great sense of safety.
Yeah.
If you make a child feel safe, or you become safe by saying, I don't need to know, then you can actually sit with that. And what we say is we can tap into our inner wisdom. We can tap into what we call our discernment. That will show us the way forward to know.
Wow. Sally, you said you didn't do media stuff. This is great.
Oh, no, I don't.
You're on fire. Sally, when I found out about you through Jimmy.
Yeah.
He was on the podcast and he kept bringing this person up. You know, he'd say, I went to see this lady and she kind of for the first time made me, I don't know exactly what he said, but it was something in this zone of how I put it together in my head was just shut up for a minute, Jimmy, and take a second to let everything in. That's what he was saying he was getting from you. And he mentioned you maybe four times. And on the last time I said, who is this lady? I've got to see if I can, you know, talk to this person because, you know, a funny thing happens when you're in a room with someone and they recommend someone else, you know. It's like how we're built. We're built to say, it must be from caveman days or whatever. I know the builder. He's really great. Mm. And then you want to go see that person. So we're vouching for that person and you're looking at their micro expressions and he just, you know, his lights came on in his eyes when he talked about you. So it was interesting for me to kind of track you down, you know, and then go along this process of would you come on the podcast? And, you know, we had conversations on the phone about you don't do this stuff normally.
No.
So it built up and then we cancelled a couple times. Well, rescheduled, you know, because we're busy people. And so I came a little bit worried, like, oh, man, I hope that this conversation goes well and you get straight into it and it's cool. But I wanted to kind of backtrack a little bit. What? Because on your website, you call yourself a change therapist. Is that right?
Yes. I think probably sanitizing the title as much to make people feel as comfortable as possible is really important. And, you know, I always play around with a lot of terminology around it so that people can go, this might fit me, this might work for me. Really, since I started, this whole sort of process started, that was about 1998. Since then, there's been such development in science and trying to understand people. There's been a lot of books that have been printed on what I do now, that the terminology change management kind of fits, but it's a bit sanitized too. So if we look, there's books out called Vibrational Medicine. There's something called energy medicine. There's lots of books called spiritual therapists. There are so many terms that you can use, but you know, it's one of those things that you try and put on a website, something that doesn't polarize people too much. So change management basically says that, you can change, and that's really important for people. You know, there's a lot of people out there who have tried so many what I call orthodox methods, and they've either what I call you've used either pharmacology or a doctor's surgery, and especially with me talk about mental health, you've got things like depression, you've got chronic fatigue, you've got a lot of illnesses out there, which aren't. Which people go for many, many years suffering, trying to find the solution, and they haven't found it. And so change management's a good word because it basically says you can change. And science over the last 10 or 15 years has progressed so much that really supports quite how organic we are, and therefore we can change, and it's not that difficult.
Wow.
So it's exciting.
It's exciting, and it feels like today – like most things, people are a bit more accepting of new ideas.
Yeah.
Was it difficult?
Well, I don't know if they're accepting of new ideas. Yeah, I think they've got desperate, actually. And it's kind of like I've been to my doctor, I've tried this, I've tried that, and they've given me these drugs. They make me feel, you know, like crap. I'm still got these symptoms, and they haven't got anywhere. So I don't know if they're excited.
Right.
I think they've got to the stage where they're desperate or more. That's the sort of people that I see.
Oh, okay, that's interesting for me because
especially with depression, cancer, they don't pick this card usually first off because it isn't something which is so acceptable by the medical profession, and it's usually I deal with a lot of quite chronic cases. So they'd rather try orthodox method first rather than my method. Then you've got people exactly like who would say, I just choose organic food. They do not want orthodox form of treatment.
Maybe that parallels the podcast in some ways. They've tried mainstream media. It's not working for them. Yeah. We're desperate for something. And, you know, we get a sense that people are like that because I'm like that. I know that in my life I'm looking for something, but I'm not sure what that is. So I'm happy to talk about it. I think we're built to talk, so let's start there. You know, I can't write very good, so I'm not going to blog or something. I can talk okay. I can get through my day. Change management, break it down. Is there a way to break it down? Because what it feels like you're saying is if the traditional ways don't work, the pills, the medicine, let's try another approach.
Yeah.
Let's get you to fix you.
What it's basically saying is we sort of were brought up with what we call very much sort of Newtonian medicine, which is you've got a brain and let's look at how the brain is made up, and it's got neuron pathways and it's got synapses, and let's look at the chemicals and let's figure out how that brain works. And then we've got a heart, and let's figure out, you know, the function of a heart and name all the arteries and what goes in there and any enzymes or hormones or what travels around in the heart. And then we've got to look at the interface between the two and figure out how it works. So things were very much segmented and compartmentalized. You know, since then, we've moved to what we call Einstein quantum physics. And it's called Einsteinonian or whatever it is. Well, how would you say that? Einsteinian medicine, which says we are vibration. Wow. We are energy. And this is extraordinary. We are something that works on a totally different basis. And actually, the advantage of it is that we can change so much more quickly if we use our multidimensional sort of interfacing energy system that is within us, around us, and it goes out, you know, layer upon layer. You know, there's so much development. You know, people are talking about subtle energies that sit above the body. So we're talking about the etheric level. We're talking about the astral level, the mental body level, the causal level. Now, if I pick one of those levels, the etheric, they are now saying that there is coding that is sitting above in an energy layer above the body. That coding, if you can feel that coding, you can change that code.
Wow.
And that etheric level, that coding will go in and change the functioning of an organ to a healthy organ. So you don't have to take a pill. You don't have, there might be need for surgery or not. But there are ways in which we say we've got energy fields that we can address a human being much less invasively, but also much more quickly. So that's just an example. And there are many areas of science we've understood neuroplasticity. Our brain is an organic organ. It can change. It's not that hard to think differently, to start creating new processes. You know, we understand that we now store all the experiences that we've had in our body as an energy in our cellular membrane. There's so much science, but it basically says we're energy. And that's really exciting. It's a faster way to change somebody. We don't necessarily use the mind, which I can call perhaps sometimes the monster, to fix the monster.
Right.
Okay. We can actually use the energy that is expressing that at various levels in our body and change that way. So it's a much quicker way.
And when people come to visit you,
yep,
you help them with these techniques.
Well, actually, don't just help them with these techniques. Basically, as you'd see on my website, you know, I had, from going to a very one-dimensional life, I had a degree in physiology. I'd worked for IBM. I was a systems engineer there. I was a project manager. Very one-dimensional. What you see is what you get. That's life. Okay, you set goals, you set a plan, and you go ahead and do it. Now, with the death of my husband, suddenly I started being able to see energies, feel energies. So it's yes, I teach my client tools, but the fundamental thing that I do is be able to see where they're at and be able to unravel them more quickly and then slowly teach them how they can unravel themselves. So this may sound a little unusual, but if I was in a tribal community in the Amazon and told them that I suddenly could see energies and hear energies and feel energies, you know, they'd all roll over and go back to sleep, quite frankly, and go, you know, tell us something new, because this is how we used to operate.
Really?
This is how we are all capable of operating.
Where did we go so wrong then?
Because I believe, and it's only a theory, I believed that really the mind was seen as, you know, a one-size-fits-all, solve everything. And that started with, once we started, you know, especially through medicine, with, my gosh, we can cure, I don't know, some of the amazing things that we've been able to cure. We'd be able to put man on the moon. We really think, my God, in our lives, our mind is the supreme organ that we've got. We call it, you know, that it can solve everything. But if we look outside in our society now, we can say, oh my gosh, I don't know how much discernment that mind actually has. And if you go back to more tribal communities, so we would call that scenario of Western civilization, thinking your way forward. If you go back to tribal communities, they would say, no, let's feel our way forward. Let's use those senses. Let's feel our way forward. We have much better discernment. And in fact, what we call now the heart brain should sit over the head brain. And it's not just about feeling your way forward. You have access to greater wisdoms, greater understandings that way. And what is, I find quite amazing, is a lot of previous civilizations have always had a link in, well, they've always used what we call the senses and had a relationship with nature and beyond. And we're probably the first civilization that's just turned around and said, let's just use the mind.
Wow. So are you sort of talking about like high levels of consciousness, like operating at that sort of level?
Yeah. And that's what I teach my clients.
Yeah.
And that actually gives them a hell of a lot of confidence. They come in with one problem. And they go, I've got a problem with my marriage, I've got a problem with my child, I'm sick, especially I love it with cancer patients or depressive, I just need to feel happy. By the time they're out the other side, it's like, my God, you've given me a system for life and I can actually go forward, I can feel, I can hear, I'm not alone, and some of the solutions that I'm hearing and feeling, they're really working. It doesn't mean that you go with the solutions that you've got and go and fit perhaps nicely back into this life that we've got out there that is a little bit crazy. It means that you are unique and you find a solution that suits you. And this is where we get into, if you're in alignment with yourself, if the frequency within yourself is in alignment, then you find you can create your whole life that sits well with that. So yeah, it is talking about high levels of consciousness too. And as I said, I came from a one-dimensional background, one-dimensional life. Definitely didn't believe in anything higher conscious. So when I started, you know, seeing energies, feeling energies and hearing things, you know, basically the first thing I did was rush to the doctor and say, my God, I think I'm having a breakdown.
Really?
Yeah, it's because there was nobody who, especially in 1998, it obviously, if I went into some of the, you know, villages around the world and tribal communities, they would, as I say, roll over and go back to sleep. But there was nothing, because it happened, the sort of opening up happened around trauma, obviously there needed to be good grounds to say, am I going barking mad?
And that's the thing, is that if you do have that feeling, you might not want to share that in today's society, right? Because people exactly. might say, you are nuts.
Well, if you went to your manager and say, I've got, you know, I feel this, I'm having a feeling about that, or I've just heard that I shouldn't do it, how do you think that's going to go down? And what I do is I don't teach my clients to go and do that, but I get them to start trusting their instincts again, to in the areas in their life which don't have such emotional stress around them, like their job.
Wow.
And they can start going, I can feel that. I heard that. That was a yes. That was a no. I'm really feeling my way forward in my life. I just know that that therefore you're getting synchronicity. Things are working out. And that gives them slowly greater confidence to do that in more of the major areas of their life.
This idea, Sally, that the trauma, the bad moment had to happen for something great. I mean, that's scary a little bit, isn't it? That it almost like knocked you out of the hypnosis of the drone life, that we're all on this one-dimensional path, as you mentioned.
Well, you can look at it another way. You can turn around and say that in here there's a coding and there's something that you should be doing in this life, and then, you know, it fits like hand in glove, or and that sometimes you get that life is the school of life, and it's learning for you to be able to get much more into alignment and to learn how to do that. To in other words, to empower yourself to become the greatest you can in this lifetime, and that's really when you've got alignment within yourself. And if you're out of alignment, which I was. You had a few lessons coming back into line. I had cancer before that. You know, I had a lot of things that were little reminders. And all I did was, you know, basically get up and just go from 100% to 150%, and then from 150% to 200% to make it work. So really, you get to a stage to say, was it something that, you know, I've looked at it from a science point of view. I believe that my neocortex was so strong, and that something like the death of my husband literally shut my mind down. I could not compute that he went out one night and he's gone. And I would say that most of my friends would say, you know, that I basically just sat in a chair. I couldn't use my mind. What did that mean? What did that mean? That meant that I had to go to another system. And so it sort of opened up as a result of a default, really. And actually, part of the work that I do with my clients is to start instantly creating a program where we sit what we call the heart brain over the mind brain. And it's really nothing more than body memory. Body memory, you wake up every morning and it goes, who am I looking at? Looking at Sally Corbell. That's fine. Well, we know what she has. She has, you know, mind brain over heart brain. That is your modus operandi. That's a common state of being. Nothing else has to happen. Body memory reminds you to go to that state. I set a program, which is nothing more than a stamping program. The amount of time you spend with your heart over your, what we call your mind, as opposed to your mind over your heart. And slowly you'll start feeling the difference. You'll start be going, oh my God, what's happened? That feels really differently. I used to feel like that all the time. Ah, that's my mind sitting over what we call our heart brain. Oh, I know how to get it back the other way because life works better that way.
Wow.
Okay, and this is what tribal communities do. This is, they go and they don't know any other way. This is what animals do.
Don't tribes, to like reach high levels of consciousness and stuff, they have like rituals, like fasting rituals and things like that.
Yep.
Also, sort of in the Amazon, they got like sort of certain
things you can
take. Yeah.
Yeah, they do, and I think that there is tradition there, and so that just follows on. And I suppose the challenge for me, which was, if this happened to me, and I've done a degree in physiology, I know that I am not made up any different than anybody else. How do I get what happened to me through trauma to happen to other people without the trauma? And actually, I'd like to say I invented it myself, but I didn't. There's something that happens that if you get into the state of what we call this, instead of the mind, which has got everything stored in it, which has come from the Western world, and you start putting what we call your heart brain over your mind, it becomes a sort of, the heart brain is more like a frequency unit. If we're energy, The heart brain is your frequency unit. And if you start sitting it over the top, it can start raising your frequency level so that you can start hearing different ideas. And so basically, when this happened, I started hearing, you're going to learn that we are energy, and you're going to learn new ways to try and get this race to have a level of consciousness and to be able to unravel themselves and to be healthy. And so I have been told, I like to say that it was me, but I was told how to get people to be able to get into that state without trauma. Unfortunately, a lot of people that I see, for example, cancer, they're in that traumatic state, and really I had to try and get them out of that, because and then sort of move forward with the program. So you don't need to do some of those traditional ways.
Sally, what's your website? I've got it here. It's sallycaldwell.co.nz. That's how people can kind of connect with you.
Yeah.
I mean, there'll be people who are probably a bit like me. They're trying to keep up. You know, I'm not used to hearing this kind of conversation, but I know I love every second of it. And, you know, we call it blessed or lucky or something, that things seem to be going okay for me. My loved ones are healthy, you know. I haven't had, I have had a moment of trauma, actually, but I don't know if it changed me. Maybe it did. Maybe that's why I'm starting the podcast. I'll bring that up
that's
a bit later.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, it is an interesting thought. Dangerous.
It works.
Yeah, well, see. But, you know, there will be people who are like, I want to explore this more. So anyone can visit your website. They can contact you.
Look, I see people from the full spectrum, okay? I love dealing with depression. I love dealing with chronic fatigue. I love dealing with cancer and anxiety. But there's people that just have very, very, well, I see a lot of people which you would say are spiritual people who say, I know they're already aware of a level of consciousness, of that we're here to evolve, and they've just seemed to have hit a glass ceiling. So I see those people. There's a whole range. I just see Joe Bloggs that just feels a little frazzled and exhausted. Mm. And so I see a whole range of people.
Mm. Joe Bloggs, that's good. That's our target market too, would be the average person. On your bio, would you mind if I read a little bit of it? Because... well, there's actually one bit before I get to that, because I print.
Okay.
Normally I make notes, but you had everything on your about page, on your website. But the bit that caught me is it's called about, and that's normal on a website, but you put who am I as your little button to click on. And that struck me because it's like you're talking about yourself differently. When you say about, it's almost third person, but who am I is very personal. And so that was interesting for me. I hadn't seen that in a long time on another website.
Oh.
So you're already saying to someone, look, who am I? I'll share a bit with you.
Mm.
Maybe subconsciously I expect you to share with me.
Yeah, I think that's critical as a therapist. I really do. Most people sit in front of me. If I look at how I've ended up in this job, I would say that my experiences in life cater for most of the things that are happening out there for people, and to be able to sit across somebody who's desperate and crying and going, I don't know what to do, they've got their hands in their head, I can say to them, okay, it's a bit like Hansel and Gretel. I've dropped the breadcrumbs. I've been lost. I know the way out. I understand what you're saying. I thought the same way. I've done the same things. And that is really enormous if you're going to trust is probably, and being able to feel that somebody understands you is probably, and therefore you're making somebody feel very safe, is a key element in therapy. It's probably about 95% of the work. And so when someone works with me, it goes against what you're supposed to do as a therapist. They know I use what I've gone through, what I know. And they can go, I get it now, or, oh, thank God you understand, or, okay, you're out the other side, so I'm going to do exactly what you tell me to do.
Mm.
And that really works for, as a, well, that's what my clients tell me. So that's why, who am I? It's a little bit of saying, know that it's not just theory, it's not just book knowledge. This is something where I know I've walked the talk.
And is it hard putting yourself out there on the website? Because what you have in these two sentences is very what you mentioned before, you know, about your husband and things like that. They're very personal things that most people would not want to share. But you've already shared that before we've ever made contact with you. It's you know what I mean? Like, those are things, in talking about the trauma that when you were talking, I was like, wait, I've had that.
But why don't people want to share it? Why don't we want to talk about it?
Exactly.
I don't know. I'd say it's one of my strongest qualifications, and most of my clients have said that. I don't know why most people should. I think in the medical profession, it's kind of like, after Chris died, I got depression. And I've also had cancer, to be able to say, how are you feeling in the middle of the night? And they go, I start thinking about my daughter's 21st and I won't be here for it, or in the wedding. And I go, that I understand. So here's a tool for what you do in the middle of the night. And I think in the medical profession, there are wonderful, wonderful people out there, but I think there's a thing which says, I can't be broken. I've got to be the person who knows. And I want to be able to say, actually, I was broken. I have been through this, and I'm out the other side. It's testimony to the system. And I think that we should be more open about the fact that, you know, what's happened to us and who we are. Transparency, I think, is really important as a therapist.
So hard, though, for, let's go back to Joe Bloggs, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Say I'm Joe Bloggs.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm fearful of is that you open up the can of worms and you can't close that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a real thing. Even now, I'm very hesitant to talk about the trauma.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't know, what I can't predict is how I will be.
So what I see is that, you know, you've got a life full of experiences, and each experience is stitched into you, a bit like you're creating a tapestry. And you start at zero and you say, now we're at 50, and every experience is a stitch, okay? And at the end of the day, you go to a therapist and you go, there's my tapestry, okay? And in there is the latest trauma, and I'm really concerned about it. Now, what I know and how I work is, life is the school of life, okay? The greater consciousness actually sets the curriculum. It knows how you got sewn together, and it also knows how to unstitch you, stitch by stitch, in a way that you're not going to fall to bits. So it was a great, I watch the lessons, I watch, because I work with the greater consciousness, I watch how they work, and I sit back and go, that's a masterpiece. That's an absolute masterpiece, because it seems to be a very gentle peeling of the onion, just the top layer. That's all they can deal with now. That's big enough. And then we might plateau out for a bit, and then there's another little layer that goes on. It's not like getting some drill and saying, all right, you've got a trauma, let's just bore down into that and let's just see how we go. So I feel that it's something which is probably a concept that I want to talk about, which I do with my clients, which is, life is a school of life. The curriculum is set by a higher consciousness, and you come in with a problem, and you might say, I've got this trauma. That doesn't mean that's where we start.
Right.
That doesn't mean where we start. There may be backstories. There may be energies around, or things that are around that need to be addressed first before we go into that. So often I might say to my client, I know you came over this issue, but if I'm looking at your energies and I can look at your background, look, we've got to look at this first. Let's just deal with this. But I know what you've come to me about. this will get addressed along the way. They feel very comfortable with that approach. Mm. So what you said then is very, very common.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Sweet.
It's like, if you unravel me here, how the hell am I going to go out and be a father? How am I going to do my job? I just want to be in a corner sobbing and rocking myself. Well, that's not going to be very good. So I don't think I ever have a client who leaves the session without feeling empowered, without feeling positive, without really feeling, I understand this level of myself. This is everything very quickly seems to make sense to people.
Mm.
And that's the most important thing, is making them feel empowered, that they start understanding themselves. And they also have a part in this. This isn't me sitting here going, this is a problem with you that I see. I start teaching them to understand their curriculum.
Yeah.
So they start coming in and going, this is what happened this week. This is obviously the curriculum. This is what I can see about myself. Gosh, I didn't see that before. So you're really getting people to be more the observer of their life and start realizing the curriculum. And basically, they feel a lot safer when they say, for example, how are you going to learn French? Oh, I'll go to university and go through the curriculum. People feel very safe with that. Mm. So the way that this works is very much seeing that life is a school of life and there's a curriculum. And people feel very comfortable with that. And they very quickly learn that the lessons they get are appropriate to what they can deal with.
Isn't it a scary thought that we have this built in us, but we can forget it? Like, you don't forget to eat. There's a need. You don't forget to drink. You would think, with our body and mind creating, evolving maybe, that would be part of it, that you couldn't forget.
Well, that's your mind telling you to eat. Right?
Yeah.
And what you're kind of talking about is more from your
feeling
heart. When you say higher consciousness,
yeah,
this may be loaded, but is that God?
That is a really interesting question. And it's something where I know that I met a guy actually when I was overseas recently. I think he wrote The God Complex. And he said to me, that's just an acronym for the grand original design of the universe, which is that as a civilization, we go to a high level of unconditional love. So what I know is that whatever understandings you've got in your mind, you then place that onto the reality around you. Now, for me, knowing that I can hear and I can see and I can feel, if you're asking me, do I know that there's a God, all I know without doubt is that there is a higher consciousness, that it's helped with every previous civilization that's been there, that it is a very important time to, for example, even Google, for example, are doing a process like that. They've got an in-house me in their company, and they've figured out that if they follow this, almost this sort of performance, this program, they get greater health, greater performance, greater innovation. So they're understanding that in a way that they've looked at, well, I assume they've looked at where ideas have come from. And they understand that the higher frequency that we hold, the more that we can access. And it's not coming from just your mind. It's sitting out there in the greater consciousness. We get back to the question, is it God? All I know is that the wisdom that's coming from there is extraordinary. And it is about new ways, new ideas, new solutions. God, I often say to my clients, I'm not going to say anything that I don't categorically know. But all I know is that if I'm going to listen to anything, there were many times where I said, I don't know who these voices are. I don't know whether I want to listen to you because I don't know your credibility. And many times I sort of thought, this is crazy. This is not how the rest of the world is living. But each time I have listened, then it has shown me their credibility. So if it's God, I can't answer that.
Those tribes we were talking about, mm-hmm. they live like that. They have gods or whatever you want
they
to call them.
Ancestors.
Yeah, that they talk to into those altered states of consciousness, DMT, whatever, ayahuasca, that type of stuff. All that.
Yeah, ayahuasca. All that.
That's where you want to get to, Acro.
Well, it's something I'm really interested in.
A lot of people are talking about ayahuasca at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. What is it? It's a...
It's the juice.
Mm. Like a very powerful, natural
drug. And you know, and there's a fantastic guy called Ram Dass. Have you ever heard of Ram Dass? Now, he was actually a Harvard professor in psychology, and he started feeling that there was very much a ceiling to his understanding about the meaning of life and how to unravel people, and he started messing around with acid. And actually, very unfortunately, got fired from Harvard. I think, I hope I'm not maligning him here, because they couldn't get him down from the roof of Harvard University. And anyway, so, you know, we've spent a lot of time trying to get to the meaning of life and understanding, you know, what else there was life truly one-dimensional? And in the end, took a trip to India, and his mother had died probably, I think, a year before or something like that.
There's this trauma.
Trauma. But no, he went in front, was in India and met a man sitting on a little Indian man sitting on a mat. And the Indian man said, I've been watching you, especially since the trauma of your mother dying. He'd never clapped eyes on him. And basically, I've seen you in these places thinking about your mother. And with that, Ram Dass said, hello, I think I'll just sit with you and start, you teach me how I get this understanding and this knowledge. And it wasn't through acid. This current phenomena, which everyone's racing off to the Amazon or Peru or whatever, I know people who have done it. I know that there are a lot of incredibly managed sites. I also know there's a current site which is supposedly managed, where somebody's just died from it, and that's probably why you're bringing it up. And I know the woman, with respect to the woman, I don't want to say her name. And obviously the issue really is, how did this happen? And what I would say to you is that we're very much a race where the younger generation, of course, they've got it right. This is crazy out here, and they're wanting answers. But we're very much an immediate society, and it's like, hey, let me just, you know, gulp that down there, you know, vomit for 24 hours, and then I will have all the answers. Mm-hmm. Basically, the most hopefully you're going to get is there is something more. Life is not one-dimensional. Life is more than that, and now I have an understanding of it. For me, that's basically with the death of my husband, what happened to me. I went through sort of 3 or 4 years of having every experience under the sun, lost souls, past life, all those sort of things to just give me an understanding of what is out there. Now, if people want to go and do that, I would say, one, be careful, but two, at the end of that, you might have some understanding about yourself, but more importantly, you understand that life isn't this sort of materialistic, very, you know, one-dimensional society that we live in now, and it's very natural for us to have a multi-layered, multi-dimensional system that can actually support us. This is a gentle process, and it's something that you can work very easily, integrate into your life and move forward with. So, you know, I don't blame the sort of current generation for wanting to go, none of this makes sense. You know, it's a very questioning generation, and, you know, Jimmy's part of that, and it's absolutely fantastic. Mm. But what I would say is I don't think it needs to be as immediate as that, you know, by taking substances.
Yeah. You know, I was saying before that we remember to eat, remember to drink.
Yeah.
Maybe we do remember the stuff through trauma. Maybe that's why we die. So it gives you a kick to remember there's something else going on, you know. When you were talking about the Harvard
mm-hmm.
person, it's through trauma.
I think he just realized he wasn't going to get there through acid. And so, you know, he got so desperate. And with the death of his mother, it just made him into a more desperate state.
Yeah.
That he ended up thinking, oh, I don't know. Well, he obviously got fired from Harvard and decided, why don't I go to India?
Mm.
And had an experience, a meeting. And so, you know, to me, I see it as a preparation. And a lot of people who come to me, they don't actually realize that if life's the curriculum of life, usually by the time they come to me, I can make sense out of their whole life or their last year or the last 6 months and say, can you see that this is a preparation for you to get to this stage to now go, I'm going to start, you know, using a different system. So I do, as I said, life's a school of life.
Mm.
And I do think that there is a greater consciousness. And I do think that we get nudged along to evolve. And if you want to know the meaning of life, it's consciousness, as far as I'm concerned, that we not only just consciousness, but consciousness means that we can sit in a high level of unconditional love. That doesn't mean that we have fear and therefore we're reactive. It means that we can just hold that high level of unconditional love. Mm. And from that, you know, Einstein said, we're energy. Energy on the inside of us creates the reality around us, okay? So people are going, how do I get that reality that, you know, it's sort of us about kite. They need to come back in and go, if I just work within myself on looking at how I achieve the highest level of unconditional love, and that requires consciousness, then that out there is going to look pretty fantastic.
Mm. I think kind of what you were saying before, Will, is that the trauma could be the catalyst for sort of stopping your kind of life reacting to the kind of the busy life that we live and stopping and thinking, you know, and then having that moment where it's, especially when death is involved and like thinking about your own morality,
mortality.
Yeah. So think about your own mortality,
yeah.
And like, you know, just having a moment where you sit down and think, you know,
it makes sense to me.
Yeah. Well,
that's what cancer does. People really have to stop and think, it's like, my God, I could die. Mortality is actually a really good way to push people into stop, think, look at what's going on. But equally, you can turn around and say trauma. World trauma is quite an interesting thing that we can talk about at the moment. People, look what's happening with ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's frightening the hell out of people.
Yes.
But at the same time, it's making people reassess and to hopefully look at the unity that's being formed. I don't agree with what's happening, but I can also see that it really changes people. And yes, you can say, well, it changes people in a negative way sometimes, but as a group consciousness, I think it's changing people in a positive way.
Oh, man. So this is everything I wanted for this podcast.
Oh, is it?
You know what I mean? Like, all I want is that people have these conversations like normal people talk about, you know?
Yeah.
But something happens when we put microphones and cameras on people that we project the Facebook version of ourselves.
Right.
The part where we don't acknowledge the bad stuff.
Right.
And I like it so much, Sally, that you went straight in with the bad stuff. In fact, that created who you are now.
That's exactly right. I usually wear a necklace and it's got quite a lot of sort of fake jewels around it. And I basically look at these jewels and say, this happened. That was dreadful. But that carved me. Look at that. That's happened. You know, my husband died. I got cancer. I had infertility. You know, my childhood, it goes on and on and on. And I go, I'm proud of these. These carved me. It's not what happens in your life. It's how you deal with it. And that's really, as far as I do, when I get clients in front of me, I say, yeah, you can look at it this way. But I call it Rubik's Cubit. Let's just turn it round a bit. Wow. And the sooner I can get the client to really start Rubik's Cubing and saying, my God, look what it's taught me. Look how it's changed me. This is fantastic.
Mm.
And give them the confidence. And really, rather than saying I'm a therapist, I'd rather say that I'm actually someone who can just hold a space for them to experiment, hold a space to ask questions, hold a space to experiment. and know that if they're getting off a little bit off track, they just come back around here. Mm. Okay, because life is so busy, it's not offering that for people. And they think that life is a bit like, you know, let's get an equation and let's just, you know, get that formula and that should work. Mm. It doesn't work like that. I'd like to talk just quickly, if I can, about an opening up in the scientific field called epigenetics. Now, epigenetics basically says that the environment you're brought up in as a child actually has the ability, it's stored within your body and has the ability to turn off and on switches, as in turn off the switch, turn on the switch that genetically changes you. And this was a study done in Holland, I don't know if you know anything about epigenetics, where they literally could use one country that had all the same gene base. And in the Second World War, the North was occupied by the Germans, and the South were occupied by the Allies. So you've got unsafe and safe, not fed and tortured, and fed and safe. And from that, they realized that that got stored as an energy, created thoughts, processes, understandings that created then went down to health issues. It's the most amazing study. And wow, this word epigenetics came up. And it's because that when we're born, we're born in delta brainwave level, but then we go up to theta. Theta's called sponge. Mm. Absorb, and store. We don't ask questions, we just store it. We don't even know it's unconscious storing. And then it becomes our unconscious energy. How we create our life isn't through our consciousness. We go, I want to create that. How come I didn't get there? In other words, how come the book, The Secret, didn't work? Basically, you know, we go at an unconscious level, there's a whole epigenetic loading. So when somebody comes to me, everybody's unique. And here's another thing about epigenetics. It's not just in your lifetime. It's familial, it's cultural, it's generational. So we're realizing that we are very complex, you know, storage units that we've got to unravel. So when somebody comes, to be able to say to them quite quickly, talk to me about your background, talk to me about your history of your childhood, talk to me about your family history, and to start connecting the dots, instantly people go, I understand myself. So there are lots of science that backs what I see energetically, what I hear energetically, what's been told to me. But and it's great. I actually think that quantum mechanics is really the bridge between what we call the tribal community, where they see their ancestors and feel those energies, and medicine. We're going to become to a sort of a point in the middle, which is much more integrated.
Wow. Love it. Love every second again. We will wrap this up because people are maybe almost at work or taking their kids for a walk or doing something where a podcast fits in, and also you need to get back to your evening, because we appreciate your time that you've given us. Because I feel like we're just scratched the surface. We could actually go all day talking to you.
Yeah.
It
hasn't been too heavy. No, it's like,
No, it's perfect. It's exactly what people need, I think.
Okay.
Because even if they don't get it all, we're at least making an attempt to expand the bubble, to say, look, there's different perspectives. That's all I want, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't want all the answers. If they feel like that they need to contact Sally Caldwell tomorrow, then they can do that, you know, and you can work with them.
Thank you.
Sally, you know energies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I probably am a bit cheeky asking this. When you look at me, am I all right?
I was actually thinking whether you'd ask me that. And I think the words is, that's not at all ethical to sort of, because at the end of the day, it's just not as simple as that.
Okay.
And it's not saying there's something wrong with you.
Right.
As I said to you, what I would do by looking at you is being able to, they would tell me a sort of a rough synopsis of where you're at and what I call the evolutionary cycle of sort of consciousness and therefore being able to create what you want to create in your life. And they would also then, you know, start a curriculum. So kind of looking at your energies, I could, isn't that interesting? Yeah, I think this isn't something that we should really have, because it's not something that I can just say yes or no. Okay. It's not that simple.
Here's my thing. I think I'm in the middle, you know? I think I'm kind of smart enough to understand there's something else apart from me.
Yep.
But I know I'm not smart enough to know, you know, how everything joins together. And I'm okay with that. I know that there's people out there who spend a whole career understanding people like yourself. And I don't think I'll ever be like that. But I'm just trying to work out my role. And I'm okay if my role is just the middle guy. If my job's to get you to blow the minds,
yeah,
and then that's fine. Mm. And then someone else comes in and we blow some more minds.
Well, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? And you said, not probably because it makes sense financially. It's not a thought that's come from the mind. I don't go, oh, yes, this is my next logical step in my career. You haven't said, yes, this is something which I can see is going to get me rich and money. It's not coming from the mind. I would suspect your answer is because I just felt that I should do this. It was something that I wanted to do. I felt it. That tells me one thing. You are beginning to feel your way forward in your life. If you want to know if you're okay, if you're feeling your way forward as opposed to being driven by thinking your way forward, then you're definitely in a healthy state.
Cool. There we go. I got my answer. I'm all right. Okay. Folks, you guys are all right too, okay? This is some stuff that we're just talking about. Like Sally said, take it all in. I don't know if she said that. Maybe I'm projecting it. But what I'm saying is take it all in. Listen to it again. That's the good thing about the podcast. And then take your next steps how you feel like it. It answers trauma for me, though. That's a good one.
Yeah, there are a lot of books. There's so many books. So, yeah. You know, they're out there. So go searching.
It's almost like there's too many, though.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Cool.
And we don't know where to look. And when I hear you talk, Sally, you make sense. You make logical sense. And there's a little bit of, hey, I don't know what the energy thing is, but it's okay, you know, because it makes sense. You're saying we're talking about consciousness. That makes sense. We're talking about there might be something else, but we don't know. That also makes sense, you know. And normally we ask the guest, what's the meaning of life? But really, this whole podcast is the meaning of life.
Yeah.
Perfect. So people can contact you, sallycaldwell.co.nz. Anything else, Craw?
Do you have anyone to talk to? Well, you're a therapist, right? I always think that.
Oh, do I have anyone to talk to? Actually, it's probably a really good point, actually. There's a guy called Peter Waugh in Wellington who actually spent probably, I think, 10 years, perhaps even longer, in India. When all of this started happening, I did sort of fall around a bit thinking, you know, who do I talk to? I thought I might be, you know, having to go on medication and be locked up, so to speak, because not in where I came from, nobody had this sort of speak happening in their life. He's actually a naturopath and a therapist, and is someone who at the age of 13 could easily hear, see, feel everything. Interesting enough, he was a very good friend of my husband, and my husband was going there for a naturopath. He had a nose infection. It's really interesting. When this happened, my husband died, he started meeting with me once a month to have lunch. And after probably about 6 months, I got plucked up the courage to be able to say, I'm seeing stuff, I'm knowing stuff, I'm hearing stuff. And he just laughed and said, I knew that. They told me that I should just stick close to you. So this is a guy which actually I have worked with probably for the last 18 years and is something that I would say New Zealand's answers to Ram Dass. He's an amazing man.
That's what happens. Jimmy told us about you.
Yeah.
Now you're mentioning another name.
Yeah.
I'll have to go on the internet hunt. Or maybe you can help us.
I think he's quite private.
That's fine.
So good luck. But he's a great guy. Yeah.
Sally, thank you so much for making time.
Pleasure.
So that's this week's podcast, friends. Heaps to think about and plenty of life stuff to ponder. Huge thanks to Sally for joining me in the podcast's New Zealand studio. And for more awesome guests like Sally, please jump online to mykiwilife.com and subscribe to My Kiwi Life on iTunes to make sure we keep taking this journey together. It's actually a really nice feeling not being alone in this crazy thing called life, eh? It's good times. You can find me on Twitter at WillFlemingNZ, and why not check out other awesome podcasts that Podcasts New Zealand have on offer by jumping online to podcasts.co.nz for podcasts on tech, entertainment, and of course, life. Hey, also, if you're enjoying the podcast, feel free to drop me an email anytime at will.fleming@podcasts.nz. Say hi, maybe who you'd like me to speak with. Just a quick thanks to everyone that helps out on My Kiwi Life, Paul Spain, Crawford, all our families for letting us do the silly hobby that is podcasting. Also, thank you to you guys who are listening. Honestly, it does mean a lot. So until next week, friends, I'm Will Fleming. Hugs to everyone.
Whoa, this is my Kiwi Life.
Hey, friends, this episode brought to you by the inaugural Asia Pacific Podcast Conference coming soon to New Zealand. If you're interested in starting a podcast, you're an existing podcaster, or involved in radio or media, then this event is perfect for you. I'll be there along with other local and international speakers, so visit www.asiapacificpodcastconference.com to register.